Well, hello. Good morning, PCC. How are you doing? Good. It's good to see all of you. For those of you who don't know me, my name's Andrew. I'm a student ministry pastor here. Pastor Jim is currently away. He's enjoying a little time, much deserved, with Christy, and they're enjoying a little bit. So that doesn't mean we're going to stop, though. We're continuing on with our series. But as we do, I just kind of wanted to start with something. See, about 90 minutes away from here is a place called Canyon Lake. Canyon Lake is this city. It's a gated city, so it's kind of like a gated community, but it's bigger, surrounding a lake. And inside, it's kind of like all the lake stuff, right? People go there to boat, to fish, to ski. And I grew up spending much of my summers there. And my grandfather lives there, and so we would go up there to spend time with my grandfather, to be a family. And he taught me how to fish, he taught me how to drive the boat, he taught me how to water ski, he taught me these things. So it's a place that is special to me. I graduated high school, I went away to the Midwest for a little bit, and then I came back. And I came back here in 2017 in the summer, we were trying to think of something to do, and we said, you know what, let's take some of the high school kids water skiing. Like, I already have a place to stay, let's go take them water skiing. So we met at the church, we loaded my car full of kids and leaders, and we drove off to Canyon Lake. It was an easy drive. You just go 110 to the 91 to the 15. We pulled off the exit. We drove up to the gate, pulled up to the guard. I rolled down my window, and he just said, "Can I have your license and the address where you're going?" And it was weird because I was stunned in that moment. I fumbled around in my wallet. I found my license. I said, yeah, here's my license. Give me just 1 minute. I need to find the address. And the people in the car were confused. They're like, I thought this is your place. I thought you've been coming here forever. What do you mean you don't know the address? I said, I don't know the address, but I know the way. I've been coming here my whole life. I've made this drive hundreds of times. I know the way here like the back of my hand. I don't need directions anymore. It doesn't matter if it's day or night. It doesn't matter if it's sunny or raining. It doesn't matter if there's traffic or it's open. It doesn't matter if I have to take the back way to it. I know how to get there. But I've never had to know the address. I've just always known how to get there. And so in that moment, I was stuck. I had to call my parents and go, Mom, what is the address to the lake house I've been going to my entire life? And I had to figure it out and give it to them. But what was interesting is it made me think it's something I had just instinctually always known. I'd known my whole life the way there. Now, I know that most of you don't know the way to Canyon Lake. Some of the students have probably gone enough to know, to have a good idea. But you don't know. But there's perhaps something that you do instinctually know. You know there's a path you've been on, a drive you've made hundreds of times, a trail you've walked, a room you've been in. You know it instinctually. I want you to hold on to that as we continue looking at our series in the farewell. If you have your Bibles, go ahead and turn to John 14. We're going to be in John 14. We're going to look at the first half today. Last week, Pastor Jim started this series. It's called The Farewell. We're looking at this kind of last conversation Jesus is having with his disciples leading up to the cross. It's a close and personal and intimate conversation like we saw in John 13 last week. But it's also what we'll see this week is very deep. It's a very deep one, too. It's not just like, hey, how are you doing? It's a deep conversation. And it gets deep here. Take a look at John 14, starting in verse 1. It says, "Do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe in me also." I'm going to pause there real quick, because I think there's something going on here. See, I think if you're following along in your notes, I'm going to give this to you a little early. I think context is key for what is happening in this passage and what's happening especially in this verse. See, I don't think that Jesus is stopping right here and when he says, hey, don't let your hearts be troubled, believe in God, believe me. I don't think he's just giving us a blanket statement. I don't think he's just saying like a general, hey, don't ever worry, don't ever be sad. Don't ever feel down. I don't think that's what Jesus is saying. And I think context kind of shows us that he's actually reaching them on a very personal and intimate level. And it reveals a way how he connects with us as well. See, context is key. Actually, just a few verses ago, if you were to look back or flip the page to John 13, in verse 21, the author John tells us that Jesus himself felt troubled in his spirit. So to me, it would feel kind of strange if just a few verses ago Jesus felt troubled in his spirit, and then he would say, "Don't ever feel troubled." We know that Jesus is the great teacher. I mean, people who don't even say Jesus is God at least say, "Hey, he's a great teacher." And that doesn't seem like the best teaching strategy. That the "do as I say, not as I do," it doesn't seem like the best teaching strategy. I remember one time I was having lunch with my grandma, and we were having fun and we were talking. But then at one point, you know, she was kind of giving me like a life lesson kind of thing, and she's like, "Hey, Andrew, you know, you gotta be healthy. You gotta make healthy choices. You gotta watch what you eat. Be smart, you know." And she said this one especially, which I remember, like, "Avoid French fries." But the lesson didn't really stick in for me, because as she was saying that, she was reaching over to my plate and eating the French fries off of it. And so I had a hard time sticking, where it's like, okay, wait, you're saying one thing, but you're doing another. I don't think Jesus is doing that here. I don't think he's saying, "Do as I say, not as I do," but I think he's reaching the disciples on a very personal level. When he's saying this, there's something deep going on. So what is happening? Well, let's look at what happened right before. See, chapter 13 of John was a pretty big whammy for the disciples. I mean, they got hit with thing after thing after thing, and they are just feeling completely overwhelmed. They're feeling lost and confused. In chapter 13, Jesus predicts that one of them is going to betray him, and then Judas leaves. Peter is told that he's going to deny Jesus three times, pretty much before morning. Oh, and probably the biggest of all of them, Jesus says, "Hey, where I'm going, you can't follow me. Not right now. You're not going there with me. Where I'm going, you can't follow." And so in a sense, he's saying, "Hey, I'm leaving." And the disciples are confused. They're lost. What do you mean? What could be next? What are we going to be alone? Are you abandoning us? If you're not here, what do we do? Who do we have? What are we going to do without you? And so Jesus, in this moment of them just feeling so much weight and pressure and alone, reaches into their life and says, "Don't worry, I'm not abandoning you. I'm not leaving you. I'm not going to leave you out to dry. You know that's not who I am. You know if I'm going, it's for a purpose, and you know I'm coming back." And then he says, "Hey, actually what I'm doing, it's for you. It's for your good. It's for your future." In fact, verse 2 says this, my Father's house has many rooms. If it were not so, would I have not told you that I'm going to prepare a place for you? And if I go prepare a place for you, I will come back, and I will take you to be with me so that you may be where I am." You know, it's interesting, as I was studying this week, I kind of thought, you know, maybe we should have renamed the sermon series, which I unfortunately helped name, but maybe we should have changed it from the farewell to something like, "See you soon." You know, like, Jesus isn't saying, like, "Goodbye, we're never going to meet again." He's more saying, "Hey, see you soon. I'm not abandoning you. Actually, I'm doing this for you. And what's more, I'm preparing something for you. I'm preparing a way for you to be with me forever. You're worried you're not going to be with me? Well, good news, you're going to be with me forever." There's an interesting phrase that happens here in verse 2. This phrase, "My Father's house has many rooms," or dwelling places. In some of the older translations, sometimes this word has been translated as mansions. And what's interesting is that this word being translated as mansions has sometimes inspired us to dream of some, like, owning some Downton Abbey or like castle-like estates in heaven, or like our own White House kind of like mansion thing in heaven. And what's funny is I've actually been there, you know, I've been in that mindset totally before. I can actually remember there was a time as I was a kid, I don't know if it was an assignment or if I did it on my own, I had this time where I had to like draw what my mansion in heaven was going to look like. And so I remember being a little kid and drawing this mansion, and I looked for a while to try to see if I could find this picture to show you, but unfortunately it was lost to time. And so what I did was I asked some of our local PCC artists to remake what they thought the picture looked like. And so one of our famous PCC artists, Connor McBurney, drew this at what he thought it probably looked like. I think it's great. It's wonderful. There's two main things to really highlight. One is that I'm pretty sure the yellow is the piston cup from Cars. So nice. I like being a race winner. And then the other one was a never-ending pasta bowl. Sounds pretty great to me too, right there. I think the only thing he's missing is I do very distinctly remember I had a zip line that was going from my top bunk into a pool. So we've got it though, we're on it. But I think the idea that sometimes we see with this when we have that translation or our mindset is that sometimes what we do is we bring the material in our very materialistic culture that we live in into the spiritual. I want this big mansion and a nice car that I can drive on streets of gold. But I don't think that's what Jesus is saying. I don't think he's talking about mansions. I don't think he's talking about real estate investments. I think he's talking about something better. Remember, the disciples are feeling overwhelmed and feeling alone. Like they're not gonna see Jesus. He's saying, don't worry, I have something better for you. He's not saying, hey, don't worry, I know I'm leaving, but good news, I'm gonna get you some nice stuff. And I think that's interesting because actually what you see sometimes in movies and TV shows, and sometimes in life too, is there's this kind of like this trope of where there's the parents that are like too busy having to work or be away or never home, always having to travel. And to try to fill that void of not being around, they buy their kid like the newest whatever is out, the newest bike, the newest Nintendo, the newest Xbox, and they try to fill that, hey, I'm not around, here's this. And it's interesting, I've heard from people before, they're like, you know, I don't want that bike, I don't want that car, I don't want that Xbox. I want you. I want to see you. I don't think that's what Jesus is saying here, because that's not who God is. God's not far off. He's not trying to buy your love with stuff. Rather, what we've seen in God's character is he desires to express his love in withness, in being with you, in being close to you, in providing you comfort, in providing you closeness, in providing you saying, look, you're not alone. I'm here. That's who God is. I'm going to get a little nerdy for just a second, so apologies. I don't always do this, but, I've got to sometimes nerd out. The Greek word for this word room, it's a plural noun, so it's like a noun for rooms, right? It's the word is monai. But here's the thing. It's based on a verb, which I actually did know, which is meno. That verb means to abide. So the language works differently. It's a little confusing. But basically, the noun for rooms is based on a verb that means to abide or to remain. Which if we know a little bit about kind of where this passage is going, we know that word is going to play a really big part in what Jesus is saying to his disciples just one chapter later when he starts talking about a vine and a gardener and what his disciples are called to do. And so Jesus is saying, look, this is not about great real estates. He's not saying, don't worry, don't let your hearts be troubled. The markets are looking up. It's trending up. Your investments are paying off. You're going to get something nice. He's saying, no, don't worry. We're going to be together. We're going to be together. I'm going to take you to myself. I'm not going to take you to heaven, is what he's saying. He said, I'm going to take you to myself, not to a place, to a person, to myself. And I think it's a reminder to us of what makes heaven so special. It's not the gold roads, it's not the big houses, it's Jesus. Jesus is what makes heaven special. And I think in that moment, what the disciples needed to hear was that. They needed to hear, I'm there. Yes, it will be nice. Yes, heaven will seem great and will feel awesome, but it's not because we're going to be rich with a big house. We know in this life, being rich with a big house doesn't always equal happiness. We know, though, it's Jesus saying, it's because you're with me. And he says, here's what's better. Verse 4. You know the way to the place where I'm going. You know the way to the place I'm going. And here's where Thomas enters in. And I love Thomas because Thomas likes to ask the questions that we're all too afraid to ask. Everyone needs one of those people in classrooms. Thomas is our guy. Thomas says, Lord, we don't know where you're going. So how can we know the way? Jesus answers, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you really know me, you will know my Father as well. From now on, you do know him, and you have seen him. Jesus says, look, Thomas, you know the way. You know the way. And Thomas is like, do I? Are you sure? I'm feeling uneasy, right? Thomas is second-guessing it in a way that I think oftentimes we do, too. Do I know the way? Am I going to heaven? Have I done the right things? Have I done enough of them? Have I believed all the right ideas in the correct order to kind of solve the puzzle? When I prayed the prayer, did I say the right words? It's kind of like it's a magic spell or something. Like, did I say the right words? Do I know the way? Jesus says, it's not just about doing things. It's not just about knowing things. It's about knowing me. It's not just about doing things. The way isn't about doing things. It's not about knowing things. Jesus says, it's about knowing me. Follow me, because I'm the way. I hope what you're seeing in this talk is there's kind of a notice where Jesus is the key, right? He's the key to all these things. He's the center of all these things. He's saying, know me. What's interesting is when the church first started, and in its earliest days, people didn't call them Christians. They weren't like, hey, look, there's a Christian. They were known as followers of the way. When you read Acts, a lot of times what you'll see is they're called followers of the way. They're followers of the way. Jesus didn't invite people to convert to Christianity. He didn't invite people to become Christians. He invited them to get to know him, to follow him. And then, because you get to know him, because you follow him, to be transformed by him. That's what Jesus invited them to. Hey, get to know me. Come follow me. And guess what? When you do that, your life will be transformed. It's going to happen. I am the way, the truth, and the life. It's all about Jesus. It's all about Jesus. Get to know him. Be with him. And when you do, you can't help but know the way. It becomes instinctual. Right? It's like the drive you take 100 times. It's like the trail you've walked, the room you know. You know it so well. Maybe you don't know the address or all the little things, but you know the way because you know Jesus. I think the truth of the matter is, though, I think often we miss that. We kind of miss it. We get caught up in the details, and we miss it. Thankfully, though, the disciples often did, too. If you look at verse 8, we get Philip enters the equation. Philip says, Lord, show us the Father, and that will be enough for us. Jesus answered, don't you know me, Philip? Even after I've been among you for such a long time, anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, show us the Father? Don't you believe that the Father and I, that I am in the Father, and that the Father is in me. The words I say to you, I do not speak on my own authority. Rather, it is the Father living in me who is doing his work. Believe me when I say that I am in the Father and the Father is in me. Or at least believe the evidence of the works themselves. Philip is kind of an interesting character. He's one of the disciples that we don't see very often, and we don't hear from very often. Like, he's kind of one of the ones we forget about. I know I forget about him. Maybe if your name is Phil, you don't. But for the most part, we kind of forget about him. But Philip is kind of interesting, right? You know, when we do see him, when he does appear, what seems to be happening is that he's kind of in his own head. He's kind of often trying to figure out the problem for himself. And when he does, he often overlooks or forgets about Jesus. He forgets about Jesus, what's going on, because he's trying to figure it out all on his own. Earlier in John, in the same book, Philip does pop up. It's one of the few times we do hear from him. What's happening is there's a large crowd that's following Jesus, and Jesus is traveling, and he looks back, he sees them, and he turns to Philip, and he says, "Hey, Philip, there's a large crowd behind us. Where are we going to get the bread to feed them?" It's kind of like this, like, impossible math questions they always do, like, on your math test, where it's like the word problems. It's like, stop, just get to the numbers. He's asking him, "Philip, how are we going to feed all these people?" And I always imagine, like, Philip, like, turns around, and he does, like, one of those things where he's like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that's six, I lost count. 1, 2, and, like, understanding, okay, there's no way that's happening. I lost count at 3,000. There's got to be more. And he's realizing it's impossible. And, in fact, his reply is this. He says, "Jesus, it would take more than half a year's salary, wages, to buy enough bread for everyone just to have one bite. You want to feed these people, Jesus, it's impossible. It'd take half a year's salary just for everyone to have, like, a little piece, a cracker. Like, what? We can't do it. There's no way we can do this." Except here's the thing. There was a way they can do it. And that way was standing right next to him. Right? There is a way. I'm the way, the truth, and the life. And what's crazy is, I think what's interesting, Philip in that moment, he says, there's no way. Right? There's no way we can do this. It takes a step back. The way is standing right next to him. Thankfully, there's another disciple, Andrew. Love that guy. Good disciple. It's a good one. Maybe name your kid Andrew instead of Philip. He goes and he finds a young kid, right? He takes the like to sometimes call it the holy happy meal, takes it from them, they share it, the boy wants to share it, gives it to Jesus. Boom, a miracle happens, and Philip, Jesus, you know, performs this miracle, and he feeds all those people, more than just one bite, because there's leftovers, and Philip just kind of has to watch and see it, instead of kind of be a part of it. Philip failed to take Jesus into account back then, and he seems to do it again. He says, "Okay, Jesus, you say you're the way. Well, can you show us the Father? If you show us the Father, well, that will be enough for me. That will be enough for us." Here's the truth, though. If you want to know who God is, look at Jesus. If you want to know who God is, look at Jesus. It's so interesting. We have these conversations often, and it's so easy to fall into this thinking, and I especially have them with conversations with people who are kind of not really in the church and outside of it, and they often say or think, like, I don't like the God of the Old Testament. Like, the God of the Old Testament, he's big, and he's mean, and he's scary. I'm not a fan. I like Jesus. Jesus is cool. Like, Jesus is humble and kind and loving and forgiving. God of Old Testament's, like, kind of mean. He'll, like, punish people. But, like, Jesus is forgiving. And I've heard it said, right, like, you know, the God of the Old Testament is a God of wrath. Thank God Jesus came, though. It's like, wait, hi. What? But there's not a big disconnect. There's not a big disconnect here, right? There's not some big switch that's being flipped. God the Father is revealing his truest self because we've missed it. Jesus is saying, look at me. We've missed it. We get caught up in the thunder and the lightning of the Old Testament, and we miss God displaying his closeness. We miss him displaying his patience. We miss him displaying his faithfulness to a people who never keep up their end of the bargain. We miss his forgiveness. Jesus shows us what the Father is really like. He says, you guys have missed it. Look at me. You want to know what the Father is like? Look at me. Jesus says, it's not just my words. We're in this together. We're doing this together. I didn't go rogue. This isn't my own plan. Father and I are in this together. We're doing this together. Philip, you want to see God? You have. You've seen him. You're looking at him. Again, it's all about Jesus. Jesus is the key. He's the way to life with God, to life to the fullest. So two things I want to spend some time thinking about. First one is this, saying Jesus is the way. So the question is, who are you following? Who are you following? Or perhaps to say it in a way that kind of sticks to the theme, what way are you following? The truth is, everyone is following something or someone. In the United States and in America, we like to have this like kind of like dream where, especially right now, where it's like, no, I make my own path. I make my own decisions. Like, I'm an individual who creates my own thing. But the truth is, everyone is following someone or something. And I think that's especially true in an age where we are driven by social media, where so many opinions and ads and content, hours and hours and hours of it, is at our fingertips. And I think the truth of the matter is for us, and the warning for us is, we need to be mindful. Because if we aren't intentionally following the way, we will unintentionally follow another way. Jesus makes it so clear, though, here in John 14. I'm the only way. I'm the only way to the Father. There's something, you know, it's mostly on topic, but there's something that had been sticking out to me for a while. I was studying it myself, and then a few weeks ago, the students and I, we went to the RISE conference, which was awesome, but the speaker brought it up then, and I was like, oh, maybe it's like a sign or something. Maybe it's important. But it's this Jewish kind of blessing, first century blessing, that I thought was super interesting. The blessing goes like this. They say, may you be covered in the dust of your rabbi. May you be covered in the dust of your rabbi, or may you be covered in the dust of your teacher. Basically, the blessing is, may you follow so closely behind your teacher that as they walk, and I think we can think about this as a beach town, and we walk on the sand. As they walk, and they're throwing up kind of the dust behind them, you're that close that it's getting on you, and you're getting dirty. May you be that close. May you be with them to that level of degree. And I think, how can we do that? How can we feel that? I mean, the disciples kind of had that moment where they could be that close. How can we do that? And I think one thing is, perhaps it starts by taking some time alone with this passage. This is a deep and rich and even comforting passage from Jesus. It reveals a lot about him and a lot about God's heart. Maybe just this week, spend some time alone sitting in this passage, not worrying about our reading plans or making sure we get enough chapters done or enough pages, but just sitting in a few verses all week. Get alone, meditate with it, let the word sink in. Don't try to do something or know something. Try to get to know Jesus in these words. And then perhaps I think the other one is, try praying. I saw it said that prayer is our primary portal to joy. It's the best part of our day, best part of our life. But it followed up with this, and I thought this was so good for me too. It says, look, if your experience with prayer is that for you prayer is closer to boredom or distraction or brings up scary emotions coming to the surface of your heart, please don't shame yourself. That won't help. Don't walk away. Just keep praying. Stay with it. Because the only non-negotiable is to keep showing up until you figure out what it's all about. The truth of the matter is when we follow this way, it leads to something amazing. Not to mansions, not to fancy cars, not to streets of gold, but to Jesus, to love, to fullness, to comfort. There's a well-known author who I really like. His name's John Mark Comer. He has this phrase I think is super interesting. He says, the reward for following Jesus is more Jesus. The reward for following Jesus is more Jesus. And sometimes that's kind of hard for us. It's really hard for my mind to wrap around it. Like, I'm a sports guy. You know, I play sports and I coach sports and I do all this stuff and it's like weird. Like, I want a trophy. Like, what do you mean? Like, that's my reward. That's like what I'm working for. But I think I got kind of a little bit of a different look just even this last weekend coaching some of my freshmen. We had our first game, and it was awesome. We won twice, props. A perfect game being thrown in game 1-2, so that was awesome. But one of the things that happened, one of the conversations I had with the kids was, hey, we have 21 of you, and there's 9 spots on the field. It's hard to work you all in. I'm trying to get what we can. But now it's high school, so we don't all play fair. It's not Little League. We're not going to give you the same amount of time. You got to work for it. And so what's interesting for them, the reward for working hard in practice is more baseball. And that's what they want. They play hard in practice. They get to play more baseball. And I think it's an interesting thing for us. The reward for following Jesus is more Jesus. Jesus is what makes heaven heaven. He's what makes it a great. He's what makes it interesting. He's what makes it special. He's what makes us feel whole. It's the thing, the selling point. Comer followed up his quote with this thing. He says, for years, when I read about the monks and the nuns who gave up normal life to do little else besides pray, I thought they were crazy. He does say, for the record, some of them were. But what if we're the ones who are unhinged? We who would rather binge Netflix or go shopping or play fantasy football, dang, he got me, then communicate with love, loving us. Who would rather give up the vast majority of our time slaving away for a job that will chew us up and spit us out the moment we no longer are useful to them? Who choose to spend hours of every day on our phones, yet claim we don't have time for God? What if we're the ones who've lost touch with reality? What if we're the ones wasting away our life? The closing thing is this. Jesus' words here are deep and powerful. He says, I'm the only way. I think for us as a church, it's, can we spend time getting to know this way? Not doing things, not learning things, but just being with Jesus. Because I think as it happens, you see something change in us instinctually. You see the way we begin to reflect Jesus more and more instinctually. It's not always about working hard to do it. It just starts to happen. And then we can have such an amazing impact. Be with Jesus and begin to learn about him and then do as he did. We spend time with Jesus. Let me pray. God, we thank you for your goodness and for your faithfulness. Lord, for the way you have said, God, you will not abandon us, you will not leave us, but you are constantly pulling us back to you. So God, I just pray for us as a people who love to wander, who love to walk away. For me as a person who loves to wander, God, just keep on pulling us back to you and let us see the joy and the peace and the comfort that is being with you. God, so we love you, we praise you. We pray in your name. Amen.